Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
321-1390, toll-free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Monday edition of The Drive. It is, it's July. Man, it feels like.
Oh, it does.
It feels like July outside. It is hot. We have heat advisories. I know we're under a heat advisory, and it have been since 10 o'clock this morning. That's just after I was getting started outside.
These are the kind of days where the air conditioners have to work hard to just keep it
hard.
Just to keep it at 80.
Just to keep it from being too hot.
Yeah, to keep this thing, you know, underneath the mid-80s in some buildings, those things are working hard. As always, shout out to the laborers, the folks out there working in this heat, because it is and I'll say it again, Bill. It's a hot one. It's not the last one.
It's just one of many that we will have. I was mentioning just before we came on, as we were leaving Pensacola yesterday, the heat index was 106 down there, and the high was only like 90 or 91. I mean, it is hot, and it feels even hotter. So do be careful.
Back for the first time since, what was your last show last week? Were you gone Tuesday?
So you're back.
You're
Wednesday on my birthday.
You're back from a couple days in Pensacola. Sounds like you had
a great time.
Yeah.
We got down there and had a little rain. Apparently, there was a good bit of rain here Thursday. One of the things that we were concerned about is coming back and expecting everything to just be dead, all the plants and everything, but no, everything looked pretty good. It's like my rain gauge still had about an inch and a half in it. I have no idea when it rained, but everything looked like it had rained. It also looked like it had blown a good bit.
Well, welcome back, Bill. It was, you know, we scratched together a couple of shows without you last week. No show Friday, no show Thursday and Friday this week, as we're off.
That is correct. For the 4th of July.
Did want to start at least early on in the show. Congratulations to the Fergusons. Saturday, Justin, our good buddy, and Mary Kate getting married in Montgomery. A beautiful ceremony. First Baptist Church downtown in Montgomery. I have no business being in a building that nice, Bill. Regardless of denomination, this thing has, I took a picture, I'll show you. The pipe organ.
All across the back.
Mm-hmm. The windows are you can tell the windows are old because they've got the names of the families who donated, and the names of the families sound like they're from 200 years ago, right? Where it's like Olivia Francis Shuttlesworth IV is, you know what I mean? Like that's who's donating the money for the stained glass windows. And I mean, it's just a gorgeous building, a gorgeous ceremony,
congratulations.
Very emotional and very spiritual.
Congratulations, you know, to Justin.
To family. Yeah, congratulations to Justin.
Absolutely.
And yeah, Mary Kate is awesome, and they're going to have a wonderful life together. So salute to. Got to see some of our old allies from the beat, you know, past and present. Vitaly came down. Gianna made an appearance. She's covering. I don't know if she's covering the Ravens or if it's more general Baltimore sports, but yeah, Gianna Hahn, the former Auburn beat writer, came down as well. So yeah, cool to see some old familiar faces and everybody that I get to see quite often. Painter was the best man,
right.
and Justin Lee was in the wedding as well with the Ferguson brothers. So yeah, it was really 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 cool stuff. And yeah, salute to the happy couple. I don't know the next time. I think Justin might be gone for a couple of weeks. We're off this Thursday anyway.
That is right.
So we'll those are excused absences as Justin
honeymoon.
Honeymoon. I believe Europe. I don't know exactly where, but he's mentioned it before. So he'll come back and tell us. I think we're gonna hear from Andy at some point. You know,
Andy said. I thought he was gone this week.
Is it this week too? Okay, so we could, you know, we'll find out. And
Andy said he'll be back, I think, on the 7th.
Yeah.
So he'll be back the end of the he'll be back this coming Sunday.
International criminal Andy Burcham out there committing heists. We decided would be
and a lot of a lot of folks are headed out and headed distances.
Thomas Crown Affair.
This is the week younger son and my daughter-in-law are heading to Amsterdam to see Taylor Swift.
Nice.
So
among other things in Amsterdam. I mean, there's lots of sights.
They're going to go visit some visit friends in London as well.
I'll tell you what. There are about 30, and maybe that's a low number, of cities in Europe where it's like, you know, if you're looking for, if you need a week, you know, if you have vacation, like cross any of them off your list. And Amsterdam's certainly one of them. They're going to have a great time.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
And then Taylor Swift, as like a cherry on top, they also we'll get to see. Get to see the Eras Tour.
Yeah. All right, you may have heard Brian Matthews in the background. Brian, just cooling down a little bit, decided to get a little last minute workout before the show today, huh?
Yeah, I stopped to wash my car, and it was pretty hot out there vacuuming and
you didn't turn the water on yourself or something. So, I mean, you know, step in front of the.
Probably should have done that.
Yeah.
Folks are worried about AI, Brian, and there are some things that I don't want machines doing.
I don't mind
them
washing my car.
I'm going to let a machine wash my car. Here in town, it does seem like every time a business is being built, it turns out to be a car wash, right? Anyone else? Or a storage? It's either storage or car washes.
Or a gigantic apartment or a condo type.
Right.
Apartment.
Yes. Right. Those are the three choices now. If you're building, but the DIY car wash right now is dozens of degrees too hot for that. Right, Bill?
Ooh, you're not kidding.
I can.
You
confirm.
Are absolutely not kidding. So, Brian, I'm glad that I'm not just for your sake. I'm glad the AC is working. Oh, yeah. All right. So we're gone for 5 days, Auburn gets a decommitment or two.
Yeah.
I leave and it's like, oh crap. Last time we talked, it's like, man, 16, Auburn's on a roll. They got 16. Then it was 15 as we left, and then before I get back, we're down to 14.
It's also, not to pivot away from football, because we will talk a lot of recruiting with Brian in the house. I would say the most significant Auburn-related thing that happened in the Auburn sports-related thing that happened in the last 5 to 7 days would be Suni Lee.
Yeah.
Last night qualifying
Making
for the Olympic team. The most prominent female Auburn athlete out there right now, maybe the most prominent ever.
Yeah, I wouldn't say maybe the most prominent right now.
Yeah,
I would say definitely.
I mean, well, you have an excellent WNBA player in Duana that some people may point to instead. But
talking about currently.
Yeah, I'd say among active. I mean, and maybe ever. With the amount of celebrity Suni Lee has right now, I mean, she's looking to go to. I mean, if she wins a second best all around, if she goes and wins a second gold medal in best all around, like that is very exclusive company of gymnasts who have ever done that twice. I believe this is the first time, to show you how rare it is, the team that the United States will send to Paris this summer has two athletes on it that have won. Simone and Suni Lee have both won the best all around gold medal before. Nobody has ever sent an Olympic team with two different former gold medalists in best all around on it to the Olympics before.
That's starting here because three more weeks, right?
We're very, very close to Paris.
The 24th, I think.
Very close to Paris Olympics coverage. Of course, the 28 Olympics in Los Angeles. They'll be here in the United States, and the U.S. will also play a prominent role in hosting the World Cup in 2 years. So a couple of very high profile international events coming to the United States shortly. But these Olympics in Paris and Suni Lee qualifying last night after a long health-related absence. She is back, and she will be gunning for a second best all-around at the Summer Olympics in Paris.
Yes, back to recruiting. Auburn did lose a couple of commitments while you were gone. Offensive lineman Carter Smith, really good player from Mobile.
Mm-hmm. Williamson.
Official to USC, decommitted shortly thereafter. That's just one to keep an eye on. Tyler Lockhart. I don't know if he officially visited Mississippi State or not, but they have certainly gotten involved in his recruitment. I think they're offering him some stuff in regards to his younger brother, too, that is making him and his family a little bit more interested in what they have to offer. I don't think Auburn is willing to do that right now. So he went ahead and decommitted and is opening things back up.
You know, he's a guy, though, it was a little bit of a surprise, wasn't it, that he committed to Auburn when he did?
It was. That of all the commitments Auburn's got, which is 14 right now, that's the one that came out of nowhere for me. You know, maybe some other people saw it coming more than I did, but for me, it did. But the good news is, as you mentioned, Alvin Henderson committed. It's been about a week or so now, I think. Number three running back in the country. And it sort of seems like the number four cornerback in the country, Blake Woodbey, is getting really close to his commitment.
Ohio State commit, right?
Yeah, which could come at any time. His teammate committed to Auburn. I think it's been about a month or so. I don't remember the exact date.
Yeah,
so.
It's been a few weeks.
And as I wrote about my Monday Musings, which are sponsored by Keith's Red Sauce, and if you put in the discount code BMAT15, you can get 15% off your online order. And, of course, you can find that locally at Kroger's and Piggly Wiggly and Publix. But you know, what happens in the last weekend or week in June isn't necessarily going to be important when we look back on, I think it's December 2nd, which is signing day. So you got to take everything with a grain of salt and understand that every recruiting class is going to have some ups and downs, some comings and goings. UFreeze has flipped approximately a dozen players in just two classes the last couple of years, high-profile players like Cam Coleman, like Connor Liu, like Keldrick Falk. These are some of the best players on the team right now. So he's going to finish this class really, really good. I think you can count on that. We'll see if it can be a top five class or not, but I would not rule that out.
I just know that I saw some things. When you're on vacation, you can't check all the time. All of a sudden, I look and I see people just losing their minds.
There's always a reaction, but I think it was a bit of overreaction here.
I'd love both your thoughts on this because I had a conversation with somebody over the weekend. They were a Hugh Freeze holdout during the coaching search a year and a half ago. They just thought Auburn should be looking in other directions. They were, even thought, it was back to the circumstances surrounding the leaving of Ole Miss and things that happened to Liberty, stuff like that. And they were sort of wondering, what was the pro Hugh Freeze argument? Why did the folks who wanted Hugh Freeze to get the job, why were they so dead set on him? And I explained, as far as I could tell, a big reason why was because he was able to turn Ole Miss into a destination for NFL talent at the most important positions in a way that Ole Miss had not been a destination for those players before. Receivers, quarterbacks, defensive ends, very important
left tackles,
the blind side.
Yeah, no kidding.
There's a movie about the way he's emphasized recruiting that position. So no, I thought you're still waiting to see it play out consistently on the field. But I would think that the folks making that argument for Hugh Freeze through a year and a half or so of seeing him on the job, they think he is doing exactly that. He's turning Auburn into a destination for those positions. I would ask, as someone who sees the boots on the ground and talks to people, who are being recruited actively by Auburn, Brian, would you say, is that a fair assessment? Hugh Freeze is doing, seemingly doing what it takes to turn Auburn into a destination for those kind of players?
It's more than a fair assessment. He is doing it, period. There's no argument against it, what he's doing in recruiting. He signed Auburn's first top 10 class in, I think, 8 years last year. He's well on his way to doing it again, maybe even top five. We'll see. Long way to go. But, yes, he is rebuilding Auburn through recruiting, through bringing in a ton of players. Even the end of that first class, that 2023 class, he took over Brian Harsin. He managed to get some great players, Kyan Lee, Connor Liu, Keldrick Falk, all three he flipped from big-time schools. Among some other
regional players too, especially in the case of Connor and Keldrick Falk was just down the road, Highland Home.
Yeah,
it was an emphasis on if you have guys who look like they can contribute in the SEC really soon nearby, you need to do a better job than Auburn had done previously of holding on to those guys.
Those kids were not coming to Auburn. Period. With the previous coach here, not a chance in the world that was happening.
Vital pieces of the two deep, seemingly going into 24.
What I've always said to the people who were unsure about Freeze or didn't want to support him or against it, I mean, it's okay to have those feelings. You have legitimate concerns about it because of some past things he's done. I think that's fine. But I think it's also reasonable to look at his track record as a football coach and expect big returns in recruiting and him turning that into at least pretty big returns on the field. We'll see. This is the biggest program he's been in charge of, so I don't know what his his upper echelon is as far as a football coach on the field. We're going to find that out here at Auburn because he's recruiting at a very high level.
That's Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com joining Bill and Dan here in the studio on the Monday Drive. Drew's back at the controls. We'd love for you to join in. You can do so by calling the Drive hotline, which is sponsored by Skybar, and that number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Also want to give a shout-out to the sponsors that are helping us go to SEC Media Days this fall, in just a couple of weeks. So shout-out to see if I can get the entire list there. Maybe I can... I can find it too. And you know what? We'll get to our first break.
Want to make sure you.
Oh, I got them.
Just didn't want you to leave anybody out.
Media Day sponsors, Orthopedic Clinic, Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, Roots Real Estate, Wisdom Law Firm, State Farm Agent, Callie Bryan Chadwick, and University Ace Hardware are the sponsors for Media Days. Also want to give a big shout out to SEC, to Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They're sponsoring the podcast and the text box, and you can get the podcast however you listen to podcasts.
We'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
Edward Via College of Osteopathic Medicine in Auburn is dedicated to its mission.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, Drew at the controls, and I believe we have a call. Yeah, I don't want it to get it. We talked about this last week, Brian. Was Brian in here when we were talking about this?
I believe.
Because, we're still efforting. I was as a matter of fact, on the way in, I stopped by one of our fine sponsors over at Franklin Tire. They had... one of the stranger things happen. It's like as I was driving along, my car is one of those where when you signal and there's somebody in the other lane, it'll beep and let you know.
Yeah, mine does too, and gives a little flash.
It does. All right. Well, I was driving a week and a half ago, and there was nobody around, and I just got in the habit of signaling when I change lanes, which I think is a good habit. I signaled to change lane, and it beeped, and it's like, oh crap. I must have missed somebody, and I looked, and there was nobody there.
Seeing ghosts.
Yeah, it's like, wait, it shouldn't do that.
Okay.
And then the next thing I know, I look down, and my like traction control light and my ABS light is on. It's like, oh, great. So I took it in, and Franklin got it taken care of. Anyway, I went by and was talking with them, and they're like, when are you coming back? And I was explaining that we're still waiting to be able to hear callers when we're on location. So that was one thing. But, yeah, we're still, you know, recovering from Memorial Day. What a great, you know, such a great holiday that still had some, with the electrical storm, there were some problems. And we have to really watch because there's like one light that will blink when we get a phone call, and you're automatically hooked into the board, and we don't really know. So last week, Brian, we were like, it's one of those things where we may have a phone call and not realize we have a call. And we'd hate for the show to just turn into, is anybody out there? Hello, are you, you know, is there somebody there?
Sounds like a three-point solve.
Yeah. But I think we do have a call now, so let's go ahead and get to the phone, 334-321-1390. Hi, you're on the drive.
Hello. I guess I need to tell who I am.
Then. It sounds like Yellowhammer.
It is, yes.
How you doing, man?
Good. So you're recovering from Memorial Day. Now you got to recover from the 4th of July.
That's right.
Ready?
I'm recovering from vacation right now, so it's like, I need another holiday.
Well, anyway, you're talking about what a great job Coach Freeze has done recruiting players, but... what about the staff that he's recruited? They must be awful attractive to these recruits. That helps in recruiting, I guess, to have those position coaches being something that everyone's enthusiastic about.
I think that's a great point. There is not a coach on the staff that I would not call a good recruiter. And I don't think I could say that about any Auburn staff that I've been associated with that I can recall.
There aren't many staffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, usually there's going to be a coach or two that you feel like, well, their main emphasis is, you know, this on the field or this certain position or something. But I do think that Hugh Freeze has assembled a staff of just outstanding recruiters.
And that includes the coordinators.
Yes.
And I think if we took this staff back 20 years ago when it was common for the staff to do the recruiting and the head coach to come in at the end and just close, they would still be one of the best recruiting staffs in the country. So Hugh Freeze takes a personal responsibility in recruiting, makes a difference for those high-caliber players. He's built a great staff around him. And then he's also built, I think, a great support staff of analysts and other off-the-field type coaches, although some of them aren't off-the-field anymore. There's new rules that allow them to be on the field. Mm-hmm. But I just think that group of folks that are involved in recruiting and player development is just top-notch. And I think you're going to see that pay off on the field here shortly. You know, you start getting all these talented players. You surround them with good coaching, good development, good schemes on both sides of the ball. You're going to have success.
Well, the other thing, Alabama puts a new coach on the field, and it's kind of like his second job interview in a way. Remember when Saban showed up? He had a kind of a lackluster first year, and everybody was complaining, we paid all that money for this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to – I mean, there's no question that there will be a lot of eyes focused on Kalen DeBoer and the job that he's doing now.
It's different than the situation Nick Saban stepped into because Nick Saban stepped into a program that was in disarray, and I think he had far more rope in year one. It will be – Nick Saban went 6-6, right, in his first season at
7-6 for the bowl game,
7-6 after he won the bowl game. I think a 6-6 regular season would be far more distressing this year for Alabama, going into the year with a consensus top 10 roster, going into the year with a consensus top 5 quarterback in college football right now in Milroe. Like, I think that it would be it's night and day from what Nick Saban had starting his Alabama tenure. And if Kalen DeBoer were to falter this year, I think it would set off alarm bells.
Do we have the ability to say that he has all the pieces, or is there any weaknesses you see?
I mean, they appear to have. You know, you don't want to just take the word of EA Sports as gospel, but we found out over the weekend some of the rankings for rosters going into this year's college football video game, and Alabama is, I believe, one of three teams that is considered a top 5 offense and a top 5 defense when you put the key pieces together for their roster, which again is just one video game company's opinion. But I don't think, and I'll kick it to Brian, I don't think it's that far off from what folks will be saying about the Alabama roster going into this season based on how they've recruited, how they've retained some of those pieces, what they've added from the portal. Like, I think the expectations are, I mean, maybe Bama and Georgia go into this year with we'll be ahead of Alabama in some of the preseason polls, maybe LSU. I doubt it. I'm thinking Alabama is your
Alabama's probably going to be the
consensus third best team in the SEC, which means you should be in the playoff and probably 9-3 or 10-2.
I'd be really surprised if there weren't three SEC teams in the 12-team playoff.
I agree.
So Georgia better watch out. Huh?
Well, everybody's been trying to get them for a couple of years. Good luck.
I think everybody with Alabama, Georgia, or Texas on the schedule better watch out because those three teams don't seem like they're going to lose very many games this year. Now, that could change, but all three of those teams, I mean, I would say that most folks are going to have them as the top three teams in the SEC. You're right. And then the variety gets to how much do you trust Ole Miss? Are you buying Missouri? Do you think LSU's in that category?
Don't forget Oklahoma.
Don't forget 10-win Oklahoma.
I mean, I think a lot of people do forget that Oklahoma won 10 games last year and beat Texas.
And I just named, and what's crazy is we just named 7 teams.
Yeah.
Too. And it's like, you know, those are 7 teams that could be justifiably in somebody's top 10, top 12 going into the season of college football.
Well, thanks.
Appreciate it, Yellowhammer. 334-321-1390. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, and let's get back to The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Again, 334-321-1390, and go ahead. You're on The Drive. Hello?
Caller, you're on the air.
That's what we could be. Well. Hello.
Appreciate it.
Is there anybody out there?
And in this case, there's not. Appreciate the phone call. Line is open again.
Yeah, here's the thing. There could be like a little glitch and a light flashes, right, and we think there's callers.
Here's the new rule, though. You got to be alert when you're on hold.
There's no idea. There's no one to say, hey, it'll be 30 seconds. Yeah, no. A minute or
two. You can't multitask while you're on hold.
You hear
with
that
us.
Little shh? That means, hey, you could be on any second.
You can multitask during the commercial break, but then once that commercial break's over, you got to be ready to go. We're gonna dump you.
Okay.
Appreciate the call, though.
Yeah. 334-321-1390. So let's see.
Drew's got to watch those lights like a hawk. That's the other thing. Right?
That is right.
Yeah.
All right, so we've been talking here.
See?
During the break.
Drew said somebody's back.
All right. Let's see if we do have a caller. Hello. You're on The Drive.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, man.
Yeah, this is Jack from Auburn.
Hey, Jack.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I was driving down the road and I went down a hill and I lost my signal, so that's what happened.
Oh, that's fine.
But anyway, listen, I guess it's official. Today's the first day that Texas and Oklahoma are in the SEC, right?
That is correct.
What kind of season do you guys see them having this fall?
Well, Texas is going to be one of the favorites.
We were just talking about something similar to that during the commercial break. Texas enters as a consensus top five team in college football. I think there are folks that will pick them to win the SEC. I would expect Georgia.
Most people are going to expect Georgia and Texas to be playing for the SEC title.
I would think Georgia's going to get the most first place votes in a couple of weeks at Media Days. Wouldn't be surprised at all if Texas finished second in that category, only to Georgia, and they'll be expected. And maybe Quinn Ewers is your preseason first team all SEC quarterback, preseason SEC offensive player of the year, categories like that. I think people expect Texas to win virtually all of their games in the regular season this year.
Their schedule's much easier than Oklahoma. Their tough games are at home. They do have to go to Ann Arbor, but that's a non-conference game.
You're right.
They finish with at Texas.
Go over there. I mean, we were talking during the break. I mean, Oklahoma's schedule is brutal.
Texas has the benefit of one of their four road games.
Their Oklahoma game should be a road game, but of course, it's the game in Dallas.
Yeah, they play four SEC games in Austin, an SEC game in Dallas, and three true road games. What's the schedule, Brian?
Mississippi State is their opener, and that's all the way into October or maybe the end of September, but it's at home. Then they get a week off before the Red River Rivalry, right, in Dallas. Then they get Georgia at home. They get Vanderbilt away, which is,
matter. So one of their road games there. So we're looking at three true road games. One of them's in Nashville.
Yep. They get Florida at home. They go to Arkansas, which can be a tough trip sometimes.
It's a bottom three team in the SEC.
Auburn went up there and won 48-10 last year.
You've said Vanderbilt and Arkansas, who could very well be the teams picked to finish last in the SEC.
Right.
The bottom two teams in the league this season.
Then they get Kentucky at home again. And then they're at Texas A&M to close it out.
So A&M is their toughest road game by far.
Yeah, compare that to Oklahoma. Oklahoma is incredible. Okay, they get Tennessee at home, then they go to Auburn, Texas in Dallas, South Carolina and Auburn, at Ole Miss, tough game, at Missouri, that's always a tough game, almost always. Alabama back home, and then finishing up against LSU. Those are the last two games.
It's not even close, those two schedules.
Oklahoma plays three true road games in SEC play, and those three games are against Tennessee, Alabama, and South Carolina. The fourth home game is in Dallas against Texas.
So they lose a game in Norman.
Yeah.
But that is not the toughest schedule in the SEC.
No, it's not. Listen, but it's just tougher than Texas's.
Florida opens with Miami and Gainesville. They host
A&M. Florida took three Power Five non-conference opponents.
They go to Mississippi State. Okay, they get Central Florida at home, which will not be a pushover. They go to Tennessee, host Kentucky, play Georgia and Jacksonville, at Texas, LSU at home, at Ole Miss, and finish up in Tallahassee against Florida State.
Yeah, Florida's like 100.
Bye-bye, Billy Napier.
Florida's like 100-1 to win the conference for a reason right now. So anyways, Jack, you were asking about how people think both of these teams will do. I think Texas will be projected as a top five team. I would expect that to be the consensus. Top five national, top two, top three team in the SEC. Oklahoma's sneaky because Bill, I'll give the floor to you on this.
Oklahoma's always got talent. They always have talent. They won 10 games a year ago. They beat Texas. They will probably be picked they'll probably be picked 5-6. Somewhere in there.
Maybe lower than seven. Five. Right.
They'll be in the upper half of the SEC, but they may be better than just upper half.
The three teams we just mentioned, plus, Bama, Georgia, or Georgia, Texas, and Bama, plus I think folks will consider Ole Miss, Missouri, and LSU ahead of Oklahoma. I'm not saying Oklahoma's
They very well may, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Oklahoma finish ahead of any of those.
Right, and that could get you to Oklahoma to seven, depending eight, depending on where people have Tennessee and A&M.
Right,
as well, and then you're getting into 7, 8, 9, which again tells you the strength.
I guess
of the
we'll
league.
Find out. I mean, so many years we've heard, well, the Big 12 is just the Big Two. It's Texas and Oklahoma, and we'll find out because it is a much more grueling schedule, especially for Oklahoma.
Yeah, I just listed 9 teams without mentioning Auburn. I mean, it tells you the strength of the conference this year.
What do you think, Jack?
Well, I kind of agree with pretty much everything y'all said. I do know as an Auburn fan, you know, with games I would like to see Auburn win, I'd probably put Oklahoma right up there with Georgia and Bama, just, you know, because that would kind of be, you could consider that probably Hugh Freeze's first signature win as the Auburn coach.
Yeah, isn't it the sexiest game Auburn has at home?
Yep.
I mean,
no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys probably remember this, of when Brent Venables was introduced as Oklahoma's coach at his press conference. It seems like he made such a huge deal about turning down the Auburn job back in 2020.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah,
it would be nice if, you know, Auburn kind of took that, you know, on a personal level.
Yeah, I'm about to bring that up again later this fall. Yeah.
Absolutely. I had one more question for Brian, and then I'll hang up and listen. And Brian, what's your? I'd love to hear your thoughts on quarterback recruiting. I know a few weeks ago you were pretty confident Auburn could get at least one of the two between Julian Lewis and KJ Lacy. And if that happens, what are the odds Auburn goes after another transfer quarterback anyway? And having said that, it's always good talking to you guys. You guys have a good fourth.
Great hearing from you, Jack.
Love it, Jack.
I still feel pretty confident about that. I don't know if it's going to be Juju or KJ. We'll see. But I think both are still on the board, and certainly Juju's on the board because Auburn hasn't sort of X'd out of that and gone, you know, 100% after KJ yet, I don't feel like. So I think it's all leading up to Big Cat Weekend. I think within a few days after that, we should have a good idea what's going to happen at quarterback. You know, for them to miss out on those two, that means they're going to go after somebody else, and they haven't really done that yet at all.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So right now, they're feeling pretty good about one of those two. We'll see how it works out. And even if they get one of those two, I still think there's a pretty good chance they're going to go with the transfer. Juju would only be 17, I think, if he signed and enrolled at Auburn in January. I don't know what his birthday is exactly, but
you're thinking the plan is that unless one of the current players on the roster, other than Peyton Thorne, were to emerge as a starter this year, Auburn's likely going fishing in the transfer portal for a veteran to start the 2025 season.
Yeah, to not have a completely – you know, inexperienced starter.
You know,
even if he's the nation's number one quarterback coming out of high school.
I think there are other variables. I mean, one of those three guys that are behind Peyton Thorne could have a great fall camp and take a step or two forward or three steps, whatever it is. And the coach is like, okay, we're going to groom you as our next starter. We're going to bring in this hot shot young guy, and we'll let y'all compete. But I think right now, just looking at
the situation. If you don't get one of them on the field a lot, That's a big bold risk. Move right. if you didn't get one of them playing time.
Especially when you look into 2025 and you'll be coming off then two consecutive top 10 classes, plus the end of the class in 23 ended up pretty good. So you finally have a pretty talented team, right? Missing that one piece, that experienced quarterback. So there's going to be a lot of hunger, a lot of push to get a guy in that you feel like can – maybe lead your team into 10-plus wins and into the playoffs.
Appreciate the call, Jack. 334-321-1390. And I think we have yet another call here on the Drive Hotline. Hi, who are we speaking to?
Hey, this is Clay from Montgomery.
Hey, hello, Clay. Clay.
Now I didn't call you earlier today, but I did one day last week. I called. I didn't realize I had pulled the phone number up, and I guess I had butt dialed you. And when I got back to where I could listen to the radio, it was like, well, this idiot, we're sitting here trying to talk to him, and I realized I was the idiot y'all were trying to talk
to.
No. The thing is, in the situation we're in right now, you know, I'm sure not blaming anybody. We're grateful that folks
I'm blaming Clay.
Drew.
Clay.
Doing.
No, hey, it's a new system. It's a new system for all of us, Clay.
Hey, my wife has done it for 30 years, and we're still married. It seems to work when you do it that way. So,
yeah, my son called me from North. He was in North Carolina, and we were at the beach. And I get a call from him thinking, oh, crap, something bad's going on, and he's carrying on a conversation with somebody else. So, I mean, yeah, it happens.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I hate to change the conversation, but we're in talk season right now, and last week this hit me, but you weren't there, Bill, and I'm not being ugly, but your hair's a little grayer than the rest of us.
Oh yeah.
I wanted to run.
That's because Brian doesn't have any.
Yeah, I got some pretty gray hair. Or did.
Well, yeah. Yours Brian, was gray. The hair on the like top me. Of my head is legitimately still brown.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. And
My daughter's a hair cutter, and she shaved my head the other day, and she said I had a bang, singular, B-A-N-G, bang. And so that's pretty bad. But I was thinking about the greatest of all times at different positions.
Uh-huh.
And I thought I had a pretty good list for middle linebackers. Just talking about Auburn, just Auburn, just okay. Homer, Ism, just loving Auburn. And I thought Mike Colin,
yep.
Kurt Crane, Quentin Riggins, Takeo Spikes.
I got one other one I would throw in there from back, not way, way, way back, but Ken Burnage.
Okay.
I'm thinking middle linebackers. Yeah.
I'm good with that, and we could probably take you just can't take Quentin Riggins out of there.
No, you can't.
He was too small and too slow and too little, and nobody believed in him except for Pat Dye and me. Then I started thinking about running backs. Now here's where it gets complicated.
Oh yeah.
Bill. The Mount Rushmore, you can only pick four. Now, Bo Jackson, so we really can only pick three because Bo is there. Where do you go from there? Because you've got, I would say, William Andrews, Brent Fullwood, and...
I believe Cadillac's the second
Steven
leading
Davis?
Rusher. Cadillac's the second leading rusher in school history, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
Right. You got nobody more recent than Steven Davis on your list at running back?
I mean, you could Trey Mason could be on there. As far as a college running back, I don't know that you could say Kerryon Johnson and Trey Mason were as good a college running back for 1 year.
Well, if you're talking in college, though, you got to remember that William Andrews was more of a blocking back than he was a featured back. I mean, because
Joe Cribbs
and Andrews, and Brooks were the feature backs, and William, you know, blossomed when he hit the NFL.
Yeah, and Davis,
that's right.
You're factoring in Davis's NFL career is interesting because I would wonder, I mean, Bill, I mean, in college, would you say, has Davis been surpassed by any Auburn running back since?
Cadillac,
absolutely.
What nominees would be Rudy, Cadillac, Ronnie.
Yeah, Rudy Johnson.
Kenny Irons would be in that mix with one spectacular season, another very good season. Ben Tate.
So that's the question. Yeah. I'm just proposing the question to y'all. Who are your four? You pick four running backs from running back you. Who would you put on Rushmore? And you can only pick three because Bo Jackson's up there.
Oh, you're right.
And I think Brent Fullwood's got to be up there.
But he had just had that 1 year, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was 1,700 yards.
I think that's where I would.
Cool then.
And that's also it's also frame of reference. I think I would be more of a prisoner of the moment picking guys from the last, you know, from 2000 and beyond, other than Bo.
That's why I'm asking the gray hair the question.
Yeah,
Dan.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it.
Only
the beard, man.
Can't answer the phone.
You know what I would do? I would just pick Auburn's top four: Bo, Cadillac, James Brooks, Joe Cribbs. I think those four.
Those are your top four all-time leading rushers. Yep. You can't go wrong with those four.
Yeah.
No, you can't. You can't. But it's amazing because when I got to thinking about it, I looked up. I just did a Google search on Auburn running backs, and it was silly what they brought up. Lionel James, I don't think, was in the top 10. And Little Train's got to be in the top 10, doesn't he?
It's wild because if you truly did a top 10, you'd have a spectacular number 11.
Now, Little Train is just 19th overall in
rushing yards.
Rushing yards, yeah, career. Believe it or not, I thought it'd be higher than that. So I can understand why somebody looking at it might do it.
You know what? There are schools that would have mentioned the Artis Payne by now after the season, right? I mean, Cameron Artis.
Well, that's because you remember Auburn had 1,000-yard rushers. It was like routine every year. It was going to be 1,000.
And what about what James Bossett did in 1993? Incredible season, just a great. Just he is a guy that, you know. Obviously, I love to watch Bo run, but I love to watch JB run back in the 90s. That was incredible.
He galloped.
Yes,
he didn't run. He galloped.
2017 was probably Auburn's last really good team, and they were a decidedly different team when Kerryon Johnson wasn't on the field.
Kerryon was a beast. I saw something popped up on my thing this morning and some highlights and of great Auburn runs or something like that. And Kerryon was several of them. He was very dynamic. But anyhow, I thought that the running back position was a lot. Your defensive line would be another good one to try to come up with just four defensive linemen.
Who were your linebackers again?
My linebackers were Mike Cohen, Kurt Crane, Quentin Riggins, and Takeo Spikes.
I mean, can't argue.
Probably say Takeo Spikes is probably the best linebacker that ever played at Auburn, including Captain Crunch.
Who's more recent?
I've got gray enough hair to throw in a guy that was like made every tackle for Auburn, Freddie Smith.
Another great one.
I mean, Freddie Smith was like Auburn's defense with Doug Barfield. It seemed like he made every single tackle.
Well, that's why he's forgettable, because of the last two words.
Yeah, I know.
Doug Barfield.
But he was a great player. He was a great running back that Auburn just put over at linebacker.
Who was a linebacker? Was it 2010 that spent maybe 10 or 15 years in the NFL? Who am I thinking of?
Oh, Josh Bynes.
Josh Bynes
had a long NFL career. You know what? Didn't have a terribly long NFL career. Dontarius was excellent.
Oh yeah,
Dontarius was more an outside linebacker,
wasn't he? Was he next to? I thought Carlos was outside.
Dontarius was more outside than he was inside.
You look at Kevin Green was a middle linebacker, and I honest to God, I'm 50 years old, so I was paying attention to Auburn when he played at Auburn. I don't even remember him playing at Auburn. And he's in the Cotton Picking Hall of Fame in the NFL.
He blossomed much, so late. Yeah, much better in the NFL than he was in college. I'll go. Danny Skutak was a pretty good dang linebacker as well.
More recently, you would have guys with KJ, right, in Deshaun Davis. You know, more recent middle linebackers that would enter the conversation for someone's Mount Rushmore. Great stuff, Clay. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. This is one of the things that's a lot of fun this time. Oh, yeah. You can start doing Mount Rushmores and things like that. Really appreciate the call. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Man, it's fun. We're getting, usually this time of year, you don't get many calls.
Yeah, it's great.
We're getting steady calls. We have another caller, but we are getting short on time. So, hey, who have we got?
It's Jeff, guys. Hi. How you doing?
Good, hey, Jeff. I tell you what, really, we'd love to be able to spend a little time with you. If you don't mind, I mean, we've got our top of the hour break coming up like in a matter of seconds. There's the music.
Yeah, the music's playing,
so,
Jeff.
So can you hang on? Tomorrow. What?
I'll check back tomorrow.
Okay, well, that's fine, yeah, because we want to have plenty of time when we talk to you. Thanks for the call, Jeff. We will get to our top of the hour break. Phone lines will continue open. We'll talk more. Brian Matthews with us again here on the Monday edition of The Drive.
Production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. Drew at the controls. We'd love for you to join in. We had some fun calls there in hour number one. It's sort of the talk time. Of course, I mean, this is a talk show, but I mean, it's the talking season, though. I mean, where there's not as much going on in the world of sports. You're having the Olympic trials are going on, getting ready for the Olympics in a few weeks. Major League Baseball's going on.
Jabari on the – now, I don't know totally how – it's the Olympic select team. I think it's the team that's going to help them get ready. A lot of younger players, Cooper Flagg, the Duke signee, among the players selected for – it gives guys a chance to be evaluated for future Olympic and international team inclusion by USA Basketball, but he's probably not going to be one of the 12 or 14 players that the United States takes to Paris. But it's still a big deal for Jabari to be – on the U.S. Olympic select team.
Oh yeah, no question about it. But
and then we were talking about SUNY in hour number one.
Yeah.
Also qualifying and looking to it would be such an achievement if she can, again, not like it's easy. You know, just all you got to do is win the best all around this summer at the Paris.
That's all
in the women's gymnastics best all around. You know, that's all you got to do. If she can do it, she will be, I think, the only American to ever win it twice. And it would I'll double check on that, but she would, I mean, it's incredibly rare, and the fact that the United States has two former champions in that event on the same team competing for the Olympics in Simone Biles and SUNY Lee is also, I mean, it's going to be one of the more eagerly anticipated moments of the Summer Olympics, maybe the most anticipated moment of the Summer Olympics, considering the star power involved when you have the defending champion and Simone Biles among the international competitors. Wouldn't be shocked at all if it was, I mean, it's not like Tanya and Nancy or anything like that, right? It's not that kind of rivalry.
God, I hope not.
From what we understand.
Not.
Although NBC would love for it to have that kind of attention, sure. Even if it's not, I mean, that's still like one of the most watched, the gold medal of the 92, or 94, I think it was 94, the gold medal of the 94 Winter Olympic figure skating, the Nancy Kerrigan, Tanya Harding, Oksana Baiul round. Like, that's like, I think it was like the most watched sporting event of the 90s or something. Like,
yeah,
maybe non Super Bowl.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, most watched non Super Bowl of the 90s. I mean, I think that rivalry and juice might add to the excitement, but there's also the question of can either Simone or SUNY achieve the history of winning a second best all around at the Summer Olympics, and they're both going to be contending for the United States in that category.
Yeah. So, but the point was, I mean, there's not a lot happening in competition wise right now.
I mean, even the Olympics don't start for another couple of weeks.
No, that's right. So we got on a couple of things, and yes, one of the things we did not get to there from our last caller. Not Jeff, who we only had for a couple of seconds, but when we were talking about, he was talking about the Mount Rushmore of different positions at Auburn. He mentioned defensive line. We didn't even get to that.
Mm-mm.
And yes, there are quite a few. And it's interesting, as we were talking over the break, the top of the hour break, interesting looking back and Dan noting that, you know, that there weren't as many high-profile defensive linemen for a while. Coach Dye had high profile.
If you look at how the NFL draft evaluated these players, that's not to say, I mean, you can be an extremely effective SEC defensive lineman and go in the sixth round or the seventh round of the NFL draft, and there are a lot of guys who had careers like that. But now I was looking at some of the some of the draft results from the 80s and 90s and refreshing Bill and Brian's memories about some of these guys. I mean, and I'll be honest with you, I couldn't tell you a lot about them firsthand because they fall a little bit below my frame of reference.
Oh, sure.
But no, there's some very prominent Auburn players at defensive tackle and defensive line. Who comes to mind if someone tasked you with a Mount Rushmore?
Tracy Rocker's the first name that's going to come to mind.
Are we combining end and tackle for the purpose of this, just guys who played on the D line?
I'm talking interior guys if we can.
But you've got to include Derek Smith, first round draft pick, been a terrific pro, was great at Auburn, and you got to. I don't care how.
Derek Brown.
Yeah. What did I say?
Smith.
Oh, I'm sorry, Derek Brown. And then Nick Fairley had one of the most incredible seasons of any defensive lineman in Auburn history. You have to include him on the list, too, I think. And then there's about seven or eight or more defensive tackles from the Pat Dye era that you could probably include, too.
Probably so. And I said, you know, it's tough to leave out somebody who was an Outland Trophy winner that none of us got to see, Zeke Smith, in the 50s or something. But, I mean, yeah, that it would really be tough to narrow that down to four.
It would be really tough.
Yeah, I wonder who, and maybe it's it'd be too difficult of a choice to ask Coach Dunn to narrow down. You know, who were the top one or two from his tenure at Auburn on the defensive line. Pat Sims was a third round pick, in the NFL draft. Cedric Marks was a second round pick in the NFL draft in 2008. You know, among the players that went from Auburn's defensive line into the NFL. Zach Clayton is somebody that played a big role right next to Nick Fairley. That was a dirty work guy. Zach was. Maybe a style of football that's going out of fashion as teams abandon the run heavy approach. But a guy like Zach Clayton was incredibly valuable in seasons like 2010 and 2009 for Auburn. So yeah, I think those guys. And then more recently, you've had
Jeremiah Ratliff, another one that converted.
Jay Ratliff,
Jay Ratliff
may have been his best. Him and Cedric Marks may have been the most talented D tackles.
In
that era.
Don's talked a good bit about him. I mean, you know, he's a guy that came in, moved from offense to defense, and then went from outside, working his way inside, and became a great NFL player.
He sure did.
And we were mentioning, I mean, as far as inside, and then more recently, I guess your inside guys, you're talking Montrevious Adams, Dontavious Russell, Justin Rogers, Marcus Harris, just this past season. Now, Marcus Harris would be another one of those guys where, and maybe he's not going to make anybody's all-time list, in part because the team didn't achieve a ton in the 3 years that he was there. Marcus Harris would have fit right in on some of the best Auburn teams ever. Right? Like he wasn't the issue these last couple of seasons.
No, you're right about that.
More Marcus Harris's would have, in fact, you know, maybe prevented some of that. So that's a guy I hope gets better. And you know what? And I think along the same lines. During the running back conversation, we didn't mention Tank Bigsby, like at all. Who I think folks again would have fit right in on some of the very best Auburn teams ever, and it's unfortunate when a team struggles, certain players who probably deserve to be mentioned among the best ever at their position don't get to be mentioned because people don't associate them with the championship success of other eras and other teams.
Yeah, what would Tank have done if you put him on that 2013 offense? Not to say that Trey Mason was, not a great back too.
Yeah.
But my goodness gracious.
Oh yeah, pick a year where Auburn had a highly productive running back and swap that running back out for peak Tank Bigsby, and I don't think you're that much worse than you would have been, you know, at any point in the last 30, 40 years.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it and see who we have. Go ahead, you're on the Drive.
Hey, this is Jerry.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, I'd like to throw in Gerald Williams in the defensive line.
It's funny, Dan was looking back at draft picks, and I mean, Gerald Williams, Gerald Robinson, both local products.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, played for years in the NFL. One thing I wanted to know is, who do y'all project as possible all-SEC players coming up for the meetings in Dallas?
From Auburn?
Yeah.
I think Jarquez could be mentioned among the top two or four running backs in the league, especially as so many of the top running backs, the other most productive running backs, moved on from last season. I think Jarquez Hunter could be in that category. Maybe not first team, although I think he'll get votes, but I think maybe first or second team, top four feels about right. That could be it. Rivaldo, maybe at tight end.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe Rivaldo. Maybe Rivaldo Fairweather is in the mix.
Maybe a linebacker. I mean,
Sante.
Yeah,
Eugene Asante, who played as much as he did last year.
Are guys that they have a chance to be, like, depending. I don't expect any of those guys to be first team, or I would be surprised if they're second team.
I got a wild card for you.
Cam Coleman.
Yep.
That's I was thinking. Yep. He will wild get card. Just because people know who he is. People know who he is, and they expect.
I don't know check how great see, the receiver class is this year. I really don't.
Yeah, I should check to see how many of the best receivers in the SEC are back, and who added what from veterans in the portal. Because it's hard to vote a true freshman. Not impossible. Oh, right. People do it, but it's hard to project a true freshman for that. Jalen McLeod. Maybe in the mix potentially. I would say Keontae's.
You know, I would say usually you've got three teams. You've got a first, second, and third team selected. Those are some guys that could get votes. Now it's going to be. I'll tell you one thing. It's going to make it difficult. It's going to make it difficult. There aren't going to be as many of the Auburn beat writers in Dallas, and that is going to hurt Auburn's. I wonder. No, I mean, because I don't think you just vote online if you're not there. I think it's the people that are there, right?
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of beat writers from a lot of schools that aren't going to Dallas.
Well, right? That's true.
So it won't just be Auburn.
Oh, Texas sweep.
Yeah, it'll be
nothing but Texas voters.
Texas A&M and Oklahoma will dominate the. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the competition's much tougher now too, with the addition of two.
Oh, you're right.
You're right.
Well, you know what it does though? Auburn's schedule has generally been a little tougher than some of the other schools. It's going to make everybody's schedule should be a little more equitable. It's going to make everybody's going to have tough schedules. We talked about Texas. That's still not the easiest schedule you're ever going to find, but these days, that's a pretty good SEC schedule.
The dissolution of division play doesn't hurt Auburn as much as it hurts a lot of other teams in the SEC. I don't know if it – I'm not ready to say it helps Auburn. Maybe it does. But the fact is, I mean, you're not playing – especially this year, when you're – granted, you're playing Oklahoma.
Well, you get Vanderbilt and you don't play Alabama, Georgia, and LSU every year.
Well, no, and the fact that you're not playing LSU at Ole Miss in a year when I think both of those teams are going to be –
you don't have LSU, Ole Miss, or Texas.
Yeah, I mean, in a year where all three of those teams are going to be projected as top 10 teams going into a lot of polls, I would say that's a significant development. And even though you add an Oklahoma to the schedule and you retain Georgia and Alabama and Texas A&M, it still opens things up a little bit. But his point about the preseason polls is a good one, because now you're competing with the starters from Texas and Oklahoma as well in the preseason rankings, and that's going to make things more difficult at a lot of positions.
Well, appreciate Jed's opinion.
Hey, thanks for the call, Jerry. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Shout out to Derek and the rest of the gang at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
Hour number two of the Drive, brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. We will get to our first break here of hour number two. We'll get Brian's takes on, we'll get his thoughts, talk about his Monday musings, and of course his fine sponsor there for that as well, and much more. Love for you to join in here on the Monday Drive.
Pack Live present to or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Again, a reminder, I don't know if I guess we did say this.
We alluded to this at the beginning of the show.
That it will be an abbreviated week. Is that just WK, I guess? No, we will be here Monday, Tuesday. I can't help myself sometimes, Brian. It's too easy. Yes, because of the July 4th, we are getting Thursday and Friday off. So we'll just be here through Wednesday on the drive. Brian,
Everybody deserves Thursday and Friday off this week, don't you?
I think that, yes, any time that national holidays –
You can't expect us to be up all night watching fireworks and doing other
stuff. That's right. And then get up and go to work the next day? No. I mean, it should be. University now, correct me, Drew or Dan, is university?
We have classes Friday.
That's what I thought. University used to.
We're off Thursday, though?
Used to give you another day. If it came on a Tuesday or Thursday, you'd get Monday or Friday off. University doesn't do that anymore. And that's one of the reasons I quit.
Let's
couldn't take it anymore.
We're only doing three shows this week, so let's make sure to mention on all three shows. Be careful this July. I always heard, and I don't know if this is true, but throughout growing up in Florida, and
people blowing their fingers.
I'd heard that it was an exceptionally busy time for emergency rooms. That this was. Bill, you're not okay. I had always heard, and I don't
Fourth
know.
Fourth of July and New Year's and New Year's
Halloween,
Eve.
Halloween and New Year's. I've heard Fourth of July, right. Halloween and New Year's are extremely busy times for emergency rooms. I don't know if that's like an old wives' tale or if that is indeed the truth. Let's assume it's the truth, and just be careful. Be aware that for a variety of reasons, this is a very busy time for ERs, and a lot of these accidents seem preventable. And so just be as careful as possible.
I was listening to something as we were on the way back, and I don't remember if it was local, if it was in Northwest Florida, or it was a national story.
The next time I go to the ER,
it was about a fireworks store being robbed, and they took almost everything, all the fireworks they had. And I thought, oh, that's dangerous. That is really, really dangerous. But I guess you know wherever that happened, look for the huge fireworks display that wasn't
Did they go in with a flamethrower and say give us the money or
no? It happened.
We're gonna start igniting stuff.
It happened like overnight, a couple of nights ago.
Oh, so okay.
After the store closed, it was cleaned out.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah. All right. So yeah,
I think it was one of those like roadside tents because there's no security cameras or anything. Yeah.
Well, there are quite a few that are only open. You know, just a short period
of time.
I'll
tell you what, an industry I know very little about. I bet most of those roadside tent fellas know how to defend themselves and their store, so I'm not going to.
I would think so.
That's a dangerous line of work to be in, knocking off fireworks stores.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Kidding. All right, Brian, one of the highlights, one of the things I look forward to every week, haven't had a chance to today because I was trying to catch up and get some things done after we came back, are your Monday musings, where you have a combination of it's a column, mm-hmm. and then you have a musical piece as well.
I did, and today I poked a little fun in Oklahoma, Texas, basically saying, welcome to the SEC, we hate you, or we wish you nothing but the worst, so to speak. So just had a little fun with that, right? Because in the SEC, we tend to hate everybody else, but then we also brag about how great the conference is at the same time.
Right.
So yeah, it's win-win.
Yeah, we want to brag, but don't be too good.
That's right. Exactly. Or root against you while you're playing, and if you win, we brag about how great the conference is. Right.
Yeah.
And
unless you're our rival,
right?
Unless you're our arch rival.
Of the last. You think about the post-Vince Young, okay, post-Colt McCoy, because they won a ton of games in those 8 years that those two guys were the starters for Texas, having 4 years of each.
Yeah, but then they went 10 years with at least four losses.
It's great years with at least four losses. It's amazing to think with Texas that, I mean, after such a period of dormancy as a superpower, now as they start to roll back to what folks, I think, expect of Texas, and now they start to look like that more on the field, they're joining the SEC. Like I think it's still a Texas team. If there are a lot of seasons in the last dozen where Texas would have joined the SEC and they would have been in big trouble from year one, because mm-hmm. they would have probably been outside the top half of the league in talent.
All those years when they're going 8-4,
the Charlie Strong seasons
in the Big 12.
Yeah, the Charlie Strong years
and 6-6 in this league.
Tom Herman. That was Charlie Strong and Tom Herman.
Golly, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, who I believe Tom Herman is the head coach at FAU. I'd forgotten about that until recently. But the remember when everybody wanted to throw their coach overboard and called Tom. Not that he's not a good coach, but it is amazing how the Texas thing took that shine away. But no, Texas goes in now as it's amazing to think they're. And I saw an exchange on social media where somebody talked about Texas, you know, ready to dominate every year in the SEC, and somebody fired back and said, you know, South Carolina has more seasons where they finished in the top 10 in the last 12 years than Texas does. So it's 3-2, but still, and one of Texas's was last year when they went to the national championship game. So they are absolutely in a position of strength, and it's very fortunate for them that they're in this position of strength, because there have been multiple years in the recent past where if they'd gone into the SEC with the roster they took into a Big 12 season, they would have gotten just blasted on a routine basis. I don't expect that to happen with Texas this year. They've got too much on the roster.
They'd have to fall apart a little bit for that to happen, I think.
Yeah, and they probably feel better about their backup quarterback situation with Manning.
Yeah,
I've heard
of that kid before.
I mean, than virtually anyone else in college football. Like, I mean maybe there's somebody who looks at their backup quarterback and thinks, you know, the evaluation is that he projects to be more than Arch Manning does, but. Like, you look and to have Quinn Ewers, who could very well be. I think it's an interesting argument between Ewers, Beck, and Milroe. How would you vote, Bill, if you were going to Media Days and you had to pick a quarterback first team all conference? I feel like those are your three options.
Those are your three, and it's not. I don't think it's a shocking coincidence. Those are your three top schools. I mean, those are the schools that everybody's going to, I think, pick 1, 2, 3 in the league. And I'd probably go in the order that. That they're going to be picked. I'd probably go
Beck. You think Ewers or Beck one?
I'd go Beck, probably.
Okay. I think there could be. I don't, especially.
I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, yeah. Quinn, I'll say this. Since Media Days is in Dallas, Quinn Ewers is going to be your preseason first team all SEC quarterback.
I think so, too. Yeah. I mean, I won't be surprised if Ewers has better numbers than Beck either. This season, because Georgia's not as pass dependent as
they threw it a little more little more than a lot of people realized this past year.
And Stetson did have 4,500 yards the season that
they had. Yeah, I mean, TCU. People like they're just who's the last Auburn
quarterback to throw for 4,500 yards
in a career?
Yeah.
What really was the last one to throw for 4,500 in a career?
No,
look it up.
Did Stidham get there in 2 years? I'm not sure he did.
I don't think he did.
I'm not sure he did in 2 seasons. So I mean, it's like,
well, Bo Nix. Be the last one. He had 7,000 yards.
Oh, okay.
Is that in his Auburn career?
Yep, just at Auburn.
Okay, so it's 2.5. Okay, so Nix is in that. Okay, but still, it is a it's.
There haven't been that many.
And Beck was very solid last year. Looked mortal in the SEC championship game, and was, you know, that the loss that kept Georgia out of the playoff. But I mean, he was. I think it was safe to say didn't folks have. Beck was pretty high on your Heisman Trophy list the morning of conference championship games, and getting bounced. Like, if he had played really well in a Georgia victory against Alabama, I think you could be talking about reigning Heisman Trophy winner Carson Beck. Instead, they don't really have an obvious candidate from the championship level teams. Jaden Daniels has such a great season statistically, and Daniels wins the award for LSU. But no, I think between Beck, Ewers, and Milroe, you've got a strong. A strong top of the SEC at the quarterback position, and I would think that those are also non-coincidentally maybe your three best teams.
And I thought that was an interesting question by Jerry, just wondering about, you know, what Auburn players could be possible all-conference candidates.
Yeah, not a lot this year, I think, in the preseason. We'll see about postseason, but I think starting next year you're going to see Auburn a lot more, populating those lists a lot more, just because of the way they're recruiting.
Yeah, you would sure hope so.
Yeah.
All right, so
this is also a year where, I mean, on the offensive line, I feel like Auburn feels good about all of their starters.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about the league, there are multiple third and fourth year starters at different spots on the Texas offensive line, on the LSU offensive line, on the Georgia offensive line, and that makes it a little bit tougher because you're talking about guys that have. And we were just saying during the commercial break, so we're talking about a NFL Hall of Fame, like the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Auburn has some representation in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, including Kevin Green fairly recently. Offensive linemen, Like, it's hard to evaluate anything really but how many games did you start.
Well, you don't have – I mean, the thing is, it's not as easy as any position in a sport where there are numbers.
We don't have –
where everybody has the same kind of numbers.
We don't have on-base percentage for offensive
linemen. You don't have
– ERA.
Right.
And so it's and so really what you're looking at is – How long is he a starter? And how, I mean, I guess you could look at how effective the offense is with him in the game, but how much credit do you really want to give?
Look at how long was he a starter? How many years did he make All Pro or the Pro Bowl?
I mean, that's
pretty much what you've got.
But what I remember last year we when Auburn added offensive linemen from, good Lord, where were the guys from? That Dylan Wade was from Tulsa, right? And and I forget where was it? Western Kentucky. Was that where
Gunnar Britton?
Where Gunnar Britton? Yeah, Gunnar Britton was a Western Kentucky transfer. I want to say
I think that's right.
And people looked at like their win loss records at those schools. It's like, what kind of offensive lineman are you getting? It's like, I don't know if that's
how's that going to.
Yeah, I don't know if that's fair with that. And with
there can be some great offensive linemen on really bad teams.
Yeah, and it feels like, you know, longevity is a huge part of being remembered as a great offensive lineman. That's why, you know, one of the Auburn players that probably. Remains in the upper echelon of Auburn products to the NFL, despite a lack of counting stats telling you how great he is Willie Anderson. You know, starting mm-hmm. in the NFL for 12 years as a left tackle, granted on a Bengals team that struggled to find a lot of consistent success during the. But that wasn't because the left tackle they kept him in the lineup every single game, every single season, I could see why folks don't have those numbers telling them Connor Liu was the best center in the SEC last year based on on-base percentage or ERA.
He's got
or
a chance
like
before he's done
I think
to
so
be an
too.
All-conference player, don't you think, Brian?
Who's that? Connor Liu? Yeah, I think he's another one that absolutely does.
Like maybe not this season, maybe not
just
going
a true sophomore year, but I do think he has a chance before
ability.
He is done.
I think he has all those tools.
Maybe not project. Maybe not preseason. Maybe not going to be voted because they're more experienced centers
Auburn,
in the league.
If Auburn goes out and wins 8 or 9 games this year, and the offense is very productive, he will be on a lot of people's lists next year as he heads into his junior year.
When we talk to Jake Thornton, I get the sense that both Connor and Tuttle are guys where he thinks don't be all that surprised if by the end of the season. They're viewed as high-level SEC starters because they had to learn so much in their first year in the conference last year. Granted, Connor was a high school player. Tuttle came from junior college. But it's still a major adjustment on the offensive line to go from the kind of players that you're facing as a junior college tackle to the kind of players that you're facing as an SEC starter. Percy Lewis learned that. And I asked Jake Thornton about because he got to see Percy as a junior college offensive lineman before going to Mississippi State. Mm-hmm. And I was like, could you tell – then that you were watching, and he was like, "Yeah, I mean, it was clear on the in the case of both Tuttle and Percy, it's like it's clear that they're destined for a higher level of football than simply the junior college ranks. Here they are in the SEC, and let's see what it looks like after they get some seasoning."
So Brian, who was the what did you go music wise today?
I went with Wolfman Jack, which is not a music artist, but was very in the musical scene.
A huge figure. In the musical scene for years. And
he passed away 29 years ago, which is hard to believe.
It's hard to believe it's been that long.
But, I didn't realize that when he started his Wolfman Jack radio show, he was actually broadcasting from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
He went in a little border town across
it's like pirate radio. I mean, those stations could be 500,000 watts and cover the entire country and did.
Said he covered the entire North America.
Yeah.
So it was incredible. And, of course, eventually I think he started recording his show and sending it out,
I've got some vinyl albums of his shows.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
wow. Okay.
Got some of those station used to run the show and then they didn't want them after they were done. It's like, well, that's cool. So I mean, you can go back and listen to whatever the week of and the top songs from that week with Wolfman doing the intros.
But he also became a celebrity. You know, there were songs written about him. He appeared on over 80.
Clap for the Wolfman was a Guess Who song.
Appeared on over 80 movies and TV shows, often just played himself.
Mm-hmm.
Hosted Midnight Special, which was a late night musical variety type show on NBC. I think that was mostly during the 70s, if I'm
correctly. It was.
So just a very interesting
you
person.
You had Midnight Special. I mean, you had all the networks were trying to come up with something for late night. You had Midnight Special, Saturday Night Live, Midnight Special, and Don Kirshner's rock concert. The ABC, I think.
But it was great looking at some of those old clips of Midnight Special and all the incredible bands he would have on there and the music.
And of course, I mean, I
was Midnight Special. Would it have been like post SNL? Was that the next thing to go on after like or was it was it came, weeknights
it,
or is it,
it came? It came on. No. It was. I think it was Friday night.
Okay,
it may have been Friday night. Right. Yeah. But yeah, it came on at I guess it was. I don't remember if it was Midnight Central or Midnight Eastern time, but yeah, it was cool.
Is this around the same time as Tom Snyder? Is this where it would have been running, or is it maybe Tom Snyder replaced it?
I think it was before Snyder.
I'm thinking like Midnight Special. For NBC, it would have been like Midnight Special, Tom Snyder, Letterman.
Okay.
So right, would have been around.
According to Google, Midnight Special was 1972 to 81, and it aired on NBC from 12:30 to 2 a.m. Eastern time.
Okay, 12:30.
So 11:30 to 1:30.
11:30 our time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it carried over into midnight.
Yep.
A couple film notes about Wolfman Jack. Appears as, he's not credited as Wolfman Jack. He is just the DJ.
Mm-hmm.
But he's throughout George Lucas's American Graffiti, which I would say it's harder to believe, Bill. There are a lot of folks out there that haven't seen American Graffiti.
That is such
a classic.
No,
that is a fun movie.
And you would say in the 90s, I think that everyone's seen American Graffiti. It's
right.
It's a very in the conscious. It's like Jaws or Star Wars or like this ubiquitous 70s movie. I don't know if there's a ton of like if you've never seen American Graffiti, it rules. It is great, and you can tell.
Wow, and you're like, oh, is that? Yes, it is.
Yes, and it's clearly made by. It's a movie that makes
you know who wrote and directed
George Lucas, of course. And it's a movie that it's the movie that gets him Star Wars. Like he's able to make Star Wars because American Graffiti is so well received. A young Harrison Ford in the cast,
very young.
of American Graffiti.
He's a tough guy with the cigarettes rolled up his sleeve.
And then he's playing that same guy in Star Wars, except it's a space pirate instead of a greaser racer. But it's just a great movie. And the music, Wolfman Jack, so cool. And then another note about Wolfman Jack would be there's a Doors song where the Texas Radio, right, where Jim Morrison is basically doing a Wolfman Jack impression for the extent of the lyrics and the chorus. He's singing in the, I think it's also a Howlin' Wolf sort of thing, but he's singing in the style of, and he's singing about pirate radio and FM radio, and it's sort of a fictionalized account of the Wolfman Jack story. And of course, Jim Morrison, leader of the Doors, UCLA Film School product, and the Doors song "The End" featured at the beginning of Apocalypse Now.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
And a very young Richard Dreyfuss too is
who would make Jaws shortly thereafter, probably for Spielberg, Lucas's buddy. So I mean, Ron Howard, right?
Absolutely.
Ron Howard, who would go on to make
Cindy Williams is Ron Howard's girlfriend.
Cindy Williams, who would be on
Laverne and Shirley,
who would be on Laverne and Shirley with Penny Marshall, who made a bunch of very important movies as well. Right. So
we have a call, but we are way behind on our break. So we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Right back with more of your phone calls, 334-321-1390. As we continue with the Monday Drive.
Part of the Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Brian, Drew at the controls. And let's get back to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Hi, you're on the Drive.
Hey,
who are we talking?
Terry, how you doing, man?
Hey, Terry.
Hey, Terry.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Brian. How y'all doing?
Great.
Bill, you were talking about one of my favorites as well. I got great players on bad teams, and I couldn't think of any. The better example of offensive lineman is Greg Robinson. Probably one of the worst Auburn teams ever. Then next year, he was the second pick in the entire NFL draft.
Well, he played on the 2013 team.
Yeah, wasn't he on the 13 team?
12 and 13. 12, the worst Auburn team ever.
12 was,
the best
yes,
Auburn
12
team
was.
Ever.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of guys on the 2010 team that were also on that 2008 team. Starters from the 10 team. Zimba and Pugh, offensive linemen that were there on that 2008 team that really struggled to do anything, and then were still there on the offensive line 2 years later when Cam Newton wins a national championship, I believe, Lee Zimba's final game.
Like 99 to, was it 2001 or 2002 they won with Rudy?
But
that 12 team was just 99. Horrifically bad. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest.
Oh, the 2012.
2012 team.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, no, and even, you know, I think that what's a shame about Auburn's, among the things that are unfortunate about the way Auburn struggled the last couple of years, is that I don't think the roster's been completely devoid of impact players. It's just not enough of them, and that's unfortunate for the guys that are, you know, whether it's, I mean, Derrick Brown got to enjoy some success in 17, and the team was pretty good in 2019.
Yep.
But then, like, if you think about Tank Bigsby or the Marcus Harris, Colby Wooden, some very Derrick Hall, some very, very good players from the last couple of years that, you know, maybe won't be remembered as all-time greats at their positions, in part because the teams didn't achieve all that much while they were there.
Now, do you guys think it's fair to say that Auburn's ones are pretty good, but where the drop-off came was the twos? The twos weren't very good at all.
You're talking about on
what, on which team?
In the 13 team, even. And some of the teams here recently.
I think that's fair that the depth hasn't been what it needs to be at this level. When you have somebody, I mean, you saw it in 17. I mean, when you know, you lose an outstanding player, you need to have somebody behind him. And Auburn had two good running backs at the start of the year. They didn't by the end of the year. That's why, I mean, that's why you'd like to be deep.
Although absorbing the kind of depth that takes if the guy who was third on the depth chart when the season starts is now a starter because of injuries to the
right
for two guys ahead of him.
It's tough to
overcome that even on the best teams. I would say if you're talking more recently, I don't know if Auburn's teams in 2022 and 2023 had starting lineups that would compete with the best teams.
No, you're
in the
probably
SEC.
Right.
If you're talking about impact, especially at the positions of most value, the quarterback, receiver, left tackle, pass rusher. No, I don't think of late depth has been the only problem. I think frontline talent has been a problem.
They had a good player in Tank Bigsby, but they had no quarterback play, no receiver play at all.
Yeah, I'd say since Bo Nix's injury, and maybe since Gus's dismissal, it's been very pronounced that the issue isn't just a lack of depth; it's also a lack of talent at the starting spots.
I think.
I mean, Hugh Freeze has signed more offensive linemen in 2 years or a year and a half than the previous coaches signed in the tenure, their whole tenure.
Yeah, you're right. It's about 5 years worth.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it, guys. Y'all take care.
Appreciate it, Terry. Good hearing from you.
Yeah, Hugh Freeze hoping to change that as far as the, you know, the front line talent being there, and you know, would seem to be making those strides on the recruiting trail, and hoping to have more of the best players in high school and college football choosing Auburn.
Derrick Hall, another one that could have been a star on any Auburn team, and just unfortunately was here for a few years where Auburn struggled. But he was a great player in person.
It happens, and it doesn't take anything away from the players. I mean, sometimes people go, well, he wasn't that good because the team wasn't that good. Well, it's not a one-man game.
Or sometimes you don't remember the players from the teams that didn't achieve the way they did. I don't know if folks are citing Derrick Hall or Colby Wooden or Marcus Harris as part of the problem. But just like we were saying with Tank Bigsby, like, those are guys that would have fit in on. I mean, you guys have seen a lot of the best teams in program history. Like, those are players that would have fit in on the best. Like, Marcus Harris would have been, you know, had no problem carving out a role for himself on a 2013 or a 2010 or a 2004 Auburn team, and it's just unfortunate that you know, his name isn't mentioned when as frequently or we don't have as many memories of him playing in the most important games, championship level games, because the team didn't get there, but it wasn't and you know this is also similar to, I would say, there's probably 25-30 years of men's basketball between Barkley's departure and the arrival of Bruce Pearl's best, you know, first really good team. Mm-hmm. You know, you got 30 or 35 years where there are probably individual players you could say came through Auburn and would have fit in on some of Auburn's best teams. There just weren't enough of them at any given time.
At a time. Yeah,
to string.
Weren't large groups of them at one time. I mean, Cliff Ellis had a couple of groups of pretty good players. But there weren't enough together through the years. That's a good point.
So much the same way Bruce Pearl has, until now, you know, Bruce Pearl had, or until he started winning consistently, Bruce Pearl probably didn't have that, even at the start of his tenure, pieces it all together and turns Auburn into what they are now.
334-321-1390. We've got one more segment to go. We'll go ahead and get caught up, get to our final break. Still time for you to join in as we wind it down here on the Monday Drive.
Stephanie Graham with Alpha.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of the Monday Drive. Been a fun show. Good to be back. Have everybody here in the studio this Monday. Again, a reminder that we will just have shows today, tomorrow, and Wednesday, and we'll be off for the holiday. We're getting Thursday and Friday for the July 4th holiday. And again, we've mentioned this a couple times. We will remind you again. Be careful if you're heading out. Man, tons of traffic. As we were on the way back from the Gulf yesterday, I mean, it was packed, both lanes packed, heading south. So I know a lot of folks are, you know, on the move at this time of year. Just do be careful. Dan was talking specifically with fireworks and things a while ago, but just do be careful. I mean, whatever your plans are over the 4th. Brian, you guys have anything you do? I know you've gone to the fireworks quite a few times.
Yeah, we'll probably do that again. We'd like to go to the local, you know, what over there behind the high school. You know,
yeah,
and just hang out and watch the fireworks. Hopefully they can make it over the tree line. I think they've had troubles with that here lately, so hopefully that's been solved for this year. Hint, hint.
Yeah, we used to, before we moved, I mean, years ago, it was cool. We could watch some of it
I'm torn here because I kind of want to tell Brian about my firework watching spot, but if I say it on the air,
everybody will know it won't be my firework
watching spot anymore. So I might have to reserve this for a couple of minutes, Brian. But I gotta lead.
Well, you know, if you go there early, you get the band, you get all the other stuff. The dog can hang out, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's usually
warm.
Gosh,
it seems to rain sometimes.
Yeah.
Around, you know, that on the 4th. I don't know why. Haven't looked at the forecast yet, but yeah.
And then of course, 2 weeks from today, we will be wrapping up our first day of SEC Media Days coverage. Media Days going
on. Brian and I will be here.
Yes.
Also, the night of the Home Run Derby for folks. Yeah, that's two weeks from today as well.
See where former Auburn commit and signee Gunnar Henderson was the first guy that signed up for the Home Run Derby.
They've made the right call to
get 26 bombs, yeah, man.
They've made the right call to alter the setup too. I do. It should not be just because of the risk of injury. It should not be a speed game. It should not be an attempt to see how many you can hit in a time limit. It should be number of outs and number of your pitches you get to face.
Yes, I agree.
And I believe the Players Association had expressed some concerns about because it also doesn't really resemble batting practice.
No,
when you
throw
factor
as fast
in
as
a,
you can.
Yeah, when it becomes, you know,
because
how many
batting practice is supposed to be getting you ready for the ball game.
Yes, and so they've I believe completely taken the clock element out of it and gone back to a number.
Baseball is a game that doesn't need the clock.
They've
it does to try to go ahead and let's keep the game moving, but you don't have to. It's not like, oh, you've got three out, you know, it's three
they've
hours,
also,
so let's get it
and,
in.
And we're going to have the Home Run Derby here on ESPN 106.7. We'll have a network coverage of that, but mm-hmm. it's also they've gotten rid of the head-to-head format for the first round, which I think is probably a smart idea too. It's simply going to be the top four performers.
That's what it should be. Because sometimes you get in because the other guy just had a terrible round, so you don't deserve to move on.
It's the top four from the first eight will advance to the next round, which I also think is
good
probably
to know.
Probably
good to know that baseball has, you know, acting with a little sense.
Yeah, no, and I think those are both. I mean, for a cool format and a thing that, by the way,
it's fun to watch.
Just like the recommendation for American.
As long as Berman's not calling it.
Something else, if you've never seen it, although there is Berman in this.
I mean, he has no idea where the ball is.
Was it 0-2?
Back to the
What's Sosa at Miller Park, Drew? Is that 0-3 or 0-4? Maybe 0-4? Because it's the one that ends in a tie. It's the game that ends in a tie was at Miller Park. And the night before that, Sammy Sosa at the Home Run Derby. It's the greatest display at a home. Josh Hamilton at Yankee Stadium is up there too. Griffey at the Warehouse in Baltimore.
Alonzo. Like,
there are some all-time great home run derby performances. I got Sosa at Miller Park at one. He's hitting balls into the Great Lakes, Bill. Like, he is, I mean, this, like, the slide at Miller Park is so far from home plate. And he's banging him off the top of the slide. Like, it's madness. And
that's not all it was. Yeah. Fun show today. Brian, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that's going on.
Check us out, auburnsports.com. Follow me on Twitter/X and Threads at BMATAU.
All right, we will be back tomorrow. No Andy. Should have Jake.
Jake.
Yeah, hopefully you'll join us as well. But that's going to wrap things up for the Monday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.